Don't you appreciate what those ladies do every week on those instruments? Would you just give them a hand? Thank you. We praise the Lord for you. Thank you, thank you. Genesis chapter 13 is where I want you to look with me this morning in just a moment while you're turning there. I love to preach from the book of Genesis because even a backslidden Baptist can find that one. Yeah, they don't without going to the index, you know. So that's good. But I want to encourage you again about the marriage conference, the Fixer Upper Weekend that we're going to do. I think we've got somewhere, last I heard, last week anyway, is about 100 people that were signed up already, and more have come in, I know, this week as well. It's going to be a great, great time. It's going to be a fun time. It's not going to be just me teaching. It's going to be us laughing a lot and maybe crying a little bit and just learning some things. I'm going to talk about unmet needs. Unmet needs. You've heard about the book His Needs and Her Needs, but there are also a lot of unmet needs. And we're going to talk about what his needs are and what her needs are and help you to understand a little bit more of what's going on. Then we're going to talk about the unrealistic expectations that everybody here, whoever has been married, goes into the wedding and the marriage with unrealistic expectations. Not even Superman could meet all the needs and expectations that we have for each other as we go in. And then I'm going to talk to you about your problem. I'm going to hone in on the specific issue that you argue about more than anything else in this. And I know what it is. It's one of the mices in your marriage. Isn't that a word? All right, well, it is in East Tennessee anyway, now, with me. It's going to be about money. You ever argue about money? Yeah. All right. It's going to be about in-laws. You ever have trouble with your in-laws? Ever argue about the mother-in-law, the father-in-law? It's going to be about children. Ever have any fights over your children? Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be about your employment. Ever argue about your job, how much you work, how much you don't work? Yeah. And then sex. Right? One of those areas is the area that you argue about, that you struggle with in your marriage more than any one of them. Now, you may argue, you may have problems with all of them, and most of us do. But there's going to be one that's going to be the main topic for dissension in your marriage and discussion. All right, the struggles. And I'm going to talk about each one of them on Saturday morning. And then we're going to have some question time about anything they want to ask. So if you haven't signed up yet, you need to sign up. If you've got a son or a daughter that's married, you've got somebody in your family that's married, I guarantee you this is going to be a great, great weekend for them. They're going to hear things they've never heard before, and I'll be very straight and very blunt and very biblical in everything that I share. Jeff Davis, who's associate pastor of worship at Grace Baptist Church, is going to come here. Used to be a stand-up comedian. And now he's a fantastic singer and musician. And he's going to be leading us and being the MC for us in that time frame. I've got some videos of Jeff and Debbie McElroy from Forever Families. If you've never heard of them, you should have heard of them. They do some of the best skits on marriage and the family of anybody in the country. And I've known them for 20 years. Brought them from Lubbock, Texas to live in Knoxville so they could be a part of Grace, and they've been ministering from there, literally around the world, with Chick-fil-A paying for all of it. And so it's going to be a great weekend, time to sign up for it, and I hope you'll do that, and if you know somebody else, call them, tell them they need to come and be a part of it as well. All right? Now let's get into the family series, you know, the family treasure series that I've been talking about. Last week I tried to teach you that the foundation for a strong Christian family should be that you pray daily for your children. Remember that? You pray daily for your children. And you pray all the time for your children. You'll pray, first of all, that they are saved early in life. Because that's important, or else they probably won't be. You need to pray that they will have a hatred for sin. Not that they'll just stay away from sin, avoid temptation, but they will actually have a hatred for sin. You need to pray for your children that they will be caught if they do something that's wrong. Pray that they will be caught so they will learn where you sin, there is a consequence for that sin to come along. and then pray they will be protected from the attacks of Satan. Because I guarantee you that your children, no matter what ages they are already susceptible to the attacks of Satan. And he would love to be able to destroy you and your family, and he'll do it through a child if that's the only way he can do it. Pray also, I told you that they will be kept from the wrong mate and that they will save themselves for the right mate. So important. And if you can help them do that, they will thank God on their wedding day that they were able to do that. So if you're all totally out of touch today, you may not have noticed that there is an all-out assault upon the American family. And the reason why Satan is attacking the family so much is because he knows that a nation or a church will only be as strong as the families that are in that nation or in that church. So if you don't like what's going on in Washington, let me tell you, it's just a reflection of what's going on in the American homes. And so you have to be totally out of touch not to know that. The weapons used to attack the family seem to be increasing all the time. Things that we never even thought of when I was growing up are now open attacks upon the family. Couples living together but not married. It's an epidemic. They don't want the commitment of marriage, but they want the benefits of marriage. No-fault divorce. When no-fault divorce came in about the 60s, I mean, that just opened up the floodgates for the destruction of the family. Glorifying adultery. Do you ever watch any movie or any TV program or anything where it's just glorified? It's not just spoken about and given, but it's glorified in some terrible ways. The homosexual agenda. If you don't know anything about that, it is a genuine agenda, and it is a destruction against the family. Same-sex marriages. Absentee fathers, the aggressive attack on Christianity in the church from our secular society, and I could go on and on and on and on about the attacks upon the family. They're everywhere that you go in every part of our society, and it's happening in churches as well. John Dewey, who is called the father of modern education, voiced the battle plan to destroy the family, whether he realized it or not, many, many years ago. For what he called progressive education, and progressive is another name for liberal. Here's what he said, and I quote, "There is no God, and there is no soul. Hence, there are no needs for the props of traditional religion. With dogma and creed excluded, the immutable truth is also dead and buried. There is no room for fixed natural law or moral absolutes." The father of modern education wrote that many years ago. Did you hear his battle plan? His battle plan to destroy the American family. He wanted to teach our children in our public schools that there is no difference between right and wrong, because there is no right and there is no wrong. There is no good, there is no evil, there is no moral, there is no immoral, there is no God, therefore there is no law or absolute principles to live by. So that means everyone can do what is right in their own eyes. That's what he said. That's what he believed. Time magazine made this prediction in 1992 for what they predicted would happen in the family in the 21st century, and we're about one-fifth of the way through the 20th century already, right? And they made this prediction in 1992, and I quote, "The family as we know it will die in the 21st century. It's nothing more than a blip in human history. We thought of it as normal, but we were wrong." If parents and Christians don't wake up, Time magazine's predictions will become a reality, and we will lose our families in the 21st century. All we have to do to see the death of American families, listen to me, is to keep on doing what we've been doing. Just keep on doing what we've been doing, and by the end of the 21st century, their prediction will come true. Just keep doing what we've been doing. Today I want to look at a man in the Old Testament who is our example and who demonstrates how you can lose your family. I don't care who you are. I don't care what kind of family you've got. Here's an example from this man how you can lose your family. It's in Genesis chapter 13. I'd ask you to stand with me, please, as we read beginning in the first verse. In chapter 13, we stand again in honor of God's holy and inspired word, which gives us negative examples to follow. It doesn't put everybody up as great, great, perfect people, but it shows us their flaws as well. And we learn about a man by the name of Lot that lost his family. Beginning in verse 13, or first verse 1 in chapter 13. So Abram went up from Egypt to Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai where his tent had been early and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Well, let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." And Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt toward Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan while Lot lived among the cities of the plains. And listen to this. And he pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. Amen. You may be seated. First thing I want you to see is that Lot started right. The problem is he finished wrong. He started right, but he finished wrong in verses 10 and 11. Lot's father must have died when he was very young. But his uncle Abraham took him in and treated him like a son. Because, see, Abraham didn't have any children. So he takes his nephew, Lot, and he watches over him. He cares for him. Lot then is raised in a godly home with Abraham, who is called the father of our faith. The father of our faith is going to be the example for Lot to grow up with and to be able to learn from and to be able to see what's going on. He knows that his uncle Abram has been given a calling from God and the promise of a promised land. And that's where he's headed toward him. And that's what he's doing. He knows all about Abram's calling. And on top of all of that, he is also very rich. Did you hear that? A lot of herds, a lot of animals. That translates into money. And what do you do when you sell them? You accumulate silver and you accumulate gold. And it simply says Abram was a very rich man. And that means that Lot was also getting that richness and that money and those things along the way as well. Lot is an example to all of us that being raised by godly parents in a godly home doesn't guarantee godly children. You see, he was raised in a great family with Abram and Sarah there in front of them. They were very rich, so he could be given anything that he needed in his life, everything he needed. He had a great family, a great beginning, and a great future, like some of the kids here. You had the same thing, but that doesn't guarantee anything. Lot is an example to all of us that you being raised in a godly home by godly parents doesn't guarantee that you're going to live a godly life. It doesn't just go that way. You don't pass it on. God has no grandchildren, as they say. Lot is called a righteous man and a just man in 2 Peter 2:7. But this righteous and just man lost his family. He lost his family in death. He lost his family morally. He lost his family in many other ways to the world, just like every unrighteous man in Sodom did. See, a righteous man and a just man can lose his family the same as a lost man can lose his family. A parent's commitment to the Lord isn't automatically transferred into the hearts of their children. No matter what they say, no matter what they do, it's not an automatic transition that takes place. You can pray for them. You can teach them. You can set a good example for them. But if your God never becomes the God of your children, then you are in danger of becoming another tragic example of a family that loses the children. You need to understand that Lot never stopped believing in God. Never stopped. I don't think he ever... He was taught to serve the Lord by Abram and by Sarah, and I'm sure that he did for all of his life. He had never known a time growing up with his family around Abram and Sarah where they did not worship. They worshiped on a regular basis. Abram made altars in a variety of places, and they worshiped God everywhere that they went along the way. He knew all about God. Lot knew all about worship. But he squandered his godly heritage, and he sacrificed his family for a walk on the wild side in Sodom. He loved God, but he made some ungodly choices in his life. And when he made those ungodly choices in his life, it caused him to lose his family in the process. Some of you were blessed with children, with the Christian parents. As children, you started out well, as Lot did. Your parents gave you everything that you could possibly need to be able to have a successful life along the way. They gave you love. They gave you protection. They gave you spiritual training. They gave you good opportunities, a good education, and a chance to serve the Lord. Where are you today? Where are you today with the spiritual treasure, the family treasure that your parents passed on to you? You need to grasp hold of that. Is your faith a reflection of your parents' faith, or is it merely a shadow of your parents' faith? Has it turned into just going to church on Sundays, or is it a lifestyle that you're living in your life, that you're giving to your children, not just by a few things, but by all things that you can possibly do along the way? You may have started your life right because of your parents' faith, but you can still finish wrong. Everything that you've worked for, as your reputation, as your family heritage that you have, that you build up with your children, everything that you've done over the last 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years even, can be lost in an instant by one wrong choice that you make. You need to guard it. How you start a race isn't as important as how you finish the race. Second thing I want you to see about Lot is he thought his family could live in Sodom, but not live like Sodom. That even though he pitched his tent near Sodom, he thought, well, they won't bother them because I'm going to teach them whatever. See, Lot was blessed with great riches because God blessed Abraham. When God blessed Abraham, he just shared it with his adopted son, his nephew, Lot. And so Lot became a part of the family business, which was raising herds of animals. They had so many flocks and so many herds, in fact, that they were running short on pasture land. And so Abram came to Lot one day and he said, I think what we have to do is, in order to keep peace in the family, then let's divide up the pasture land. If you go to the east, I'll go to the west. If you go to the west, I'll go to the east. And he says to him, Lot, I will give you the first choice of the pasture land. So you choose where you want to go. You choose where you want to take your family and take your business and take all of those that work with you along the way. And so Lot chose the lush pasture land in the east by the Jordan River. It had the best grass for his animals, for all the herds. But it had one great danger. It was also in the neighborhood of Sodom.
But he didn't consider that. He just thought he could go over there and be near Sodom, but he wouldn't become like Sodom, and neither would his children nor his wife. So look how he made his choice, and you'll learn how good parents can lose their children. It simply says this: Lot chose for himself. He didn't choose what God wanted him to do. He didn't choose what Abraham wanted him to do. He didn't choose what his children or his wife wanted to do. Lot chose for himself what he wanted, what he thought was best for business along the way. If he had done what was right, he would have said something like this: "Wait a minute, you're the uncle. You've been like a father to me. You're the patriarch of this whole clan. You're the one God's spoken to and revealed and called out to go to the promised land. I can't make the first choice. You're the patriarch. You have the right to make the first choice. You choose, and I'll take whatever you don't want." But he didn't do that. He didn't think about Abraham. He chose for himself. He chose what was best for him. Lot only saw dollar signs in the east. He didn't choose what was right. He didn't choose what was best. He didn't choose what was proper. He made his choice based upon what he thought was the most profitable for his business. I've known people who moved their families away from a church. They told me, "Oh, God called us here. God's changed our life. God's using this for help us raise our children in this church." I've heard all of that. And then you guys said, "I'm moving to this other state, which doesn't have any Baptist churches, but it's going to be good for my business." Making all the wrong choices for the wrong reasons. Making it for himself. All he saw was dollar signs. He chose what he thought was best for his financial failure, not what was best for his family's future. Verse 13 says this. Simply, he pitched his tent towards Sodom. You know, they lived in tents. That's where he moved to. They just moved their tents around, and now he can pitch it towards Sodom. Near Sodom is what that means, in the direction not far from Sodom, because he'd get a lot of business in Sodom as well, because it was one of the larger cities around at that time. And so he set up his shepherding business near Sodom. He was a grown man. Working with ungodly people, but he was a mature man. He had the benefits of a family that had taught him right from wrong. He had the benefits of worshiping God for all of his life. He hadn't been surrounded by those kinds of people, and so he wasn't going to be tempted in the same way that his family was, because he was in the fields most of the time anyway, dealing with the sheep and dealing with his workers. But his family is in Sodom. His family's shopping in Sodom. His children are going to the schools in Sodom. His children are going to the parties in Sodom, the birthday parties and all that, socializing with all the people that the children that are there in Sodom. While their father was making a lot of money, they were learning the ways of Sodom. It was a defining time in their young lives. A defining time, like for some of you, you know, teenagers and even 8-10 years of age, a defining time where the teenagers are building things into their life that's going to stick with them for the rest of their lives. And they're there, and it's a defining moment in their lives, and they're learning all of these things that are coming to them, and all those things that are going to impact their lives, and they're surrounded by a secular, progressive, godless society and people. He even allowed his daughters to marry men who came from ungodly families, men who were very much involved in the things of Sodom along the way. He put his wife in the community where she could be influenced by the lusts of the flesh. And so instead of protecting his family as a man should, he put his family in mortal danger by allowing them to be in that situation. And he lost his family, he lost his business, and he lost everything else because of his choice. Parents, do you know how much of an impact your choices have on your children? From the time they're born in your hand, you're making choices that are determining the future of your children. When I was 26, I've told you before, I was called into the ministry. I ended up getting a basketball scholarship at Belmont University, and I had to go from where I was at living in Ohio down to there, 400 miles away. I had three children at the time, 6, 4, and 2. I picked up those three little children and carried them away from their grandparents, their schools, their neighborhoods, their friends, everything that they knew except for their parents, their mom and their dad, and took them 400 miles away and put them in a whole new environment for them. I wasn't smart enough to realize it back then, but when I made my choice to answer God's call, I was also making a choice for the future of my children. They're not going to stay away. They don't know what's happening. I'm making a choice that is going to literally impact the rest of their lives. Their lives were forever altered because of my choice. And that's what all parents do. Where you choose to work, where you choose to play, what you choose to do with your money, what you choose to do with your time, what you choose to do with your influence, what you choose to do with your family, all of that are choices you make that determine the future of your children. Don't place your children in situations or around people where they can be exposed to the things that can destroy them. Here's how it works. The environment you choose to live in will shape the attitudes of your children. The attitudes will determine the choices you make and the friends that you have, and the choices you make today determine your future. So if you put them in that in the environment, you're going to determine who they're going to associate with, and then you're going to which is going to determine their attitudes, and then it's going to determine the choices. Now, a mature adult like Lot, he can handle it probably. He can handle it. We don't know of him doing anything that was really a part of the sins of Sodom. It's more what he didn't do than what he did do and how it impacted his family. So a mature adult like Lot, maybe you, may be able to overcome the peer pressure that come to your children, but children won't be able to always overcome that. Now, you were raised in a good Bible-teaching church, perhaps, and you may be able to overcome the influence of not being in a Bible-teaching church like that family that moved to another state, but your children may not be able to overcome that because they don't have the foundation of a good church like you had when you were growing up. If you pitch your family tent near Sodom, they will associate with the people of Sodom, and that means they will develop the attitudes of Sodom, and it means they will make choices that look like Sodom, and that means that the judgment of Sodom will fall upon them and their future also. Don't place your children in situations. Don't place your children around people where they will be exposed to the things that can destroy them. You need to provide a godly environment for them. You need to choose very carefully the friends that your children have. You help choose those friends that they have. You need to teach them that they shouldn't even date unchristian boys or girls. They shouldn't even date them, let alone think about getting serious with any one of them along the way. You need to check out the movies that they're watching. You need to check out the TV programs that they're watching. You need to monitor their cell phones. Yes, monitor them. You need to make sure that at least once a week, and any time you want to, you can go pick up their phone and see who they're texting. And if you don't do that, you're not being the parent that you ought to be. You need to check them. You need to watch over. You need to have the password to their computers. You need to have the password so, and they know that you're going to be going in and checking out what they're doing, the emails they have, the texts, and all the things going on. The one boy who wasn't a member of the church, didn't come to our church, but I was counseling the parents. The mother said that the boy was 15 years old and he had a lock on the outside of his bedroom door. Didn't want it to go in. That's being a poor parent. You need to be able to get in and have that access to all of them. You need to look around their room from time to time and monitor their progress. Will they like it? Absolutely not. They won't like it. But your job isn't to make them like you. Your job is to protect your children from themselves. Protect them from themselves, and that will keep you from losing your family to the sins of Sodom. The third thing that caused Lot to lose his family was he thought his family would follow his words and not his examples. He has a family meeting. I want to read it to you in chapter 19 in that book, in verse 14. 19 verse 14, so Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, hurry and get out of this place because the Lord is about to destroy the city. But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. He has a family meeting, tells them all to leave Sodom before it's too late, and they laugh at him. It's the most serious time in the life of his family, and they don't understand what he's saying. They think he's just making a joke. They've never heard him talk like this before. His sons-in-law didn't just laugh at him. They refused to listen to him. They just thought, no, that's not going to happen with us. Listen to me, parents. If the only time you bring up spiritual matters and you pray and talk about God is when you or your family is in trouble, then your kids will laugh at you too. Not something you do when there's a storm outside. It's something you do every day. It's a lifestyle. It's in every decision you make is, first of all, what does God say? Every decision you make is, where is God in this? Is this God or is this something else leading me? While Lot's family is struggling in Sodom, what's Abraham doing? Abraham is on to the west where he's taken his flocks. And Abraham has already been told by God that he's going to destroy the city. He probably knew it, I suppose, before even Lot was told by the angels. And so while Lot's down there talking to his family, trying to get them to leave, Abraham is up looking and listening to what God is saying to him, that it's going to be destroyed. And Abraham knows Lot's down there. He knows that Lot's children are down there. He knows the family is down there. And he's trying to protect his family, probably first of all, before all the other citizens of Sodom. He's trying to protect Lot. And so he says, God, I know that you're a God of love. And I know, and this is a whole sermon in itself, I know that you are a God who always does what is right. And so therefore, God, I know because you always do what is right, that all those people, you're not going to kill all of those people. If there were 50 righteous people there in that city, you wouldn't do that, God. I know that's not your nature. And God agrees with him. He said, you're right. He said, if you can find 50 righteous people down there, Abram, then I won't destroy the city. And I don't know if there's a time frame in there or if all of a sudden Abram just thought, I had that good idea and it came out. Now, I don't know if I can find 50 or not. Because he knows some things about Sodom too, just like Lot knew about it before he ever pitched his tent that way. And so he goes down, if I can find 45. And then he goes, if I can find 40, if I can find 30. And he starts backing up on what he's saying and what he's trying to get to work out this deal with God. He's bargaining with God. And God says every time, sure, find 45, find 40, find 35, find 30, and I won't destroy the city. And then Abram finally gets down. What about 10, God? If I can just find 10 people in that entire city of thousands of people, just 10 righteous people. Now he knows Lot's in there. He knows his family's in there. If I can just find 10, will you not destroy the city? He said, no. You find 10 righteous people, and you're right. I'm a God of love and a God of justice, and I will, a God of mercy, and I will not destroy it if you can find me 10 people. But you see, God always does what is right. And if God chooses to destroy the whole city, it's because it is the right thing to do. there's six people that we know about in the Bible that were in Lot's family. So if he just gets the six people, all they had to do is go out there and find four more. And they could have spared the whole city, but he didn't find even 10. And obviously he didn't even find six. Lot has lived there for a long time. He hasn't even influenced 10 people to know and worship his God. A man of wealth, a man who sits, if you read the whole story in Genesis, he's eventually sitting at the gates of Sodom. What's that mean? It means he's on the town council. He ran for office, and now he's one of the political leaders of the town. He hasn't reached 10 people to worship his God. This is the sad fact that's happening to too many Christian families in the 21st century. Lot hadn't changed Sodom, but Sodom had changed Lot. I don't know how much of an influence we as Christians and churches are having on America today, but I know how much influence America is having on Christians. He may never submit to the sins of Sodom, Lot might not, but he is now in cooperation with Satan, unknowingly working hand in hand with Satan to destroy his own family when he pitched his tent in that direction. He ended up actually giving Satan the keys to his household, and his tracks were everywhere. Lot had lost the respect of his family. They didn't listen to his words. Why? His inconsistent lifestyle. What he said didn't match up with what he did. And that's disastrous for children. Living for the Lord on Monday through Saturday is more important than an amen on Sunday morning. So Lot thought his family would follow his words and not his example, but he was wrong. And if you think that, you'll be wrong also. And then lastly, number four, he didn't realize the hold Sodom had on him until he tried to leave. He didn't realize the hold that city of Sodom and the culture and the position that he had risen to in the leadership area. And so on that morning then, when he's ready to be able to move out and move on, it says this, and when the morning came that God had told him, we're going to destroy this. When the morning came, he hesitated. God had told him, the angel had said, get out of here. Don't look at it. Get out of here. And he hesitated. There was so much he had to leave behind, and he didn't want to leave all of those things. The angels try to get him to leave, but he doesn't want to go. They finally have to grab his hand and drag him away and his daughters. Had he been warned by angels, he had been warned by angels, and he still didn't want to leave Sodom, even from the angel's warning. Many people must think that God's like our moms. Remember how moms are when if you're like my mom and the discipline they gave you. Remember how a lot of moms are this way, I think. They usually discipline their kids this way. Now, don't you touch your sister again. About 5 minutes later, I said, don't touch your sister again. And then about 5 minutes later, if you touch your sister one more time, you're going to get it. In a few minutes, I'm warning you for the last time. Okay, that did it. Wait till your dad gets home. Isn't that what a lot of our children grow up with? We're more concerned about making them like us than respecting us. We're more important about making sure they have everything they want rather than giving them everything they need. And when the morning came, he hesitated. The type of parenting like that will produce an undisciplined child, because that mother is an undisciplined parent. If you're at the grocery store and your kid's acting up, you say, okay, when we get home, you're going to be punished in this way. And then you get home and you feel sorry for them. And you don't punish them. That's an undisciplined parent. Not a reflection of an undisciplined child. When an undisciplined child grows up, he or she will become an undisciplined adult who will have a hard time believing God really means what he says. When he says things like, whom the Lord loves, he chastises. He will give you what he says that he will give you. The soul that sins, God said, shall surely die. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man, woman, boy, or girl shall do, they shall reap what they sow. Our God's a holy God. He cannot condone sin in you, in me, not in his own son. And that's why Jesus had to die on the cross. He could not condone any sin. The sun was probably shining the day that Lot stood there and the angels got his hand and dragging he and his daughters away. The sons-in-law, they've decided they're not going anyway, but the angels are trying to save the two daughters that go along with him. The sun's probably shining, and he must not believe that God's going to judge the sin because he doesn't want to leave. This is a new day. Maybe God's changed his mind. Maybe God didn't really mean what he said, that there's no sign of judgment around. Maybe the loving and forgiving God that I know him to be has changed his mind. I knew it wasn't like God to destroy a whole city. Maybe he was just trying to scare Lot. Maybe that's what it was. Whatever his reason, Lot wants to stay in Sodom. He didn't want to leave there. He wants to live there. He had become so entangled with Sodom, and he didn't even realize it. See, if you would have asked him about leaving Sodom earlier, he would have said something like, I can leave Sodom anytime I want to. But he couldn't do it. He didn't realize how much of Sodom had been attached to him and to his family until it was too late. I learned this from Adrian Rogers, in my mind, you know, the greatest pastor I ever knew. He said this, sin will take you farther than you want to go. Sin will cost you more than you want to pay. And sin will keep you longer than you want to stay. You can count on it. When that fateful day was over for Lot, Lot experienced the truth of Adrian Rogers' words. He had lost his wife to a pillar of salt. He had lost his sons-in-law to their attachment to Sodom. He had lost all of his friends who were a part of Sodom that he should have been witnessing to instead of simply working with. He had lost all of his possessions, all those animals, all that wealth, all that influence, most of all. He lost his family. Do you know who your worst enemy is? Don't look at your husband. Don't look at your wife. No. Don't look at your parents. No. You are your own worst enemy. I am my own worst enemy. No one causes Ron more problems than Ron does. Now, I'm good at blaming other people for those problems. But nobody causes more problems for me than I cause for me. No one causes more problems for you than you. We just are good at psychological workings where we can blame some other people. But you are your own worst enemy. You cause yourself more trouble than anyone else could ever cause you. We like to blame others because it protects our egos, right? But nobody hurts you more than you do. Every wrong choice you ever made was your decision. Nobody forced you to. The devil never makes you do that. The devil can't make you do anything. All he can do is doctor it up and pretty it up and make it smell good and look good and entice you to come. But when you choose it, it's your choice. So every bad decision you've ever made was your choice. It was my choice. No one made me do it. So there's no doubt that there are probably some people here today who are in the process of losing their family. Because in our society, it happens on a regular basis in our churches. I've seen hundreds of them.
hundreds of them lost through the years. I wonder, though, for you today, if God sent an angel to warn you. I wonder if today God sent an angel, a messenger, to be able to help you save your family while there's still time. Maybe your grown grandchildren or your grown sons and daughters that are married. I wonder if God's trying to protect you from yourself, because he doesn't want you to lose your family. So don't allow your anger, don't allow your pride, don't allow your desires to destroy your family. Don't. There's some of you today that you shouldn't walk down this altar. You shouldn't walk down these aisles and fall on your knees and begin to pray for your family. There's some of you here today, you ought to run down these aisles. You ought to run down these aisles, and today you ought to be praying, because I think God's already told you what you need to be adjusting in your life. What you could be doing, the influence you could be exerting toward those around you, toward those that you say you love the most, the ones you say you care about the most, the ones you have the most influence over. You ought to be praying this morning that God will begin to use you to save your family while there's still time. Let's pray together. Father, we thank you for your word, and sometimes it's hard to take. Sometimes it's hard to receive, because when we talk about families, we're talking about something very personal. We're talking about those people that are the closest to our hearts, the ones we are attached to more than anyone else, and we care about and love more than anyone else in this world. But Lord, I pray for dads, and I pray for moms today, that you will begin to open up your word to them and show them what they need to do so they can be the instruments that will be a blessing to their children and not a curse to them. I pray that you'll speak to them, Lord, and give them the courage to be able to make the adjustments in their life. And Lord, I pray that today would be a time where they would begin to pray for their children, as we talked about last week. Begin to pray on a daily basis for their children, because they want to save their children. They want to save their family. So Lord, bless this time of invitation. Whatever it is you want to do in it, Lord, whatever it is that needs to be done, I know that you have the power to heal. You have the power to protect. You have the power to transform individual lives and whole families. And I pray for that power to be poured out upon this invitation, upon this service today, so that we might all be drawn closer to you and found in the perfect center of your will for our lives. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.